wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. Mm-hmm. Special Saturday Night Live edition of the show that we're about to launch into.
Right. In honor of their 40th anniversary. I think they have a 40th anniversary show coming out this month.
So that's February. This year. Well, for some February. Reason, I thought last year was 40th anniversary. No,
it started in 75.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. 40 is an odd number. I always feel 40 is cheating.
It isn't like, yeah.
It's not 50.
50 is a big deal, but 40.
Yeah.
For people. 40th birthday is big because it's like when you're officially middle-aged.
I guess. Anyway, before we launch into Saturday Night Live, some housekeeping that we have on the show. Anyone who gets the show from the blog, you will see as you visit the blog in the next couple of weeks, we are debuting some new shows. I'm on one of them. Some other familiar voices will be on the other ones. Do not panic. It's still under our aegis. I think is
well,
the phrase.
I don't know if it's under anybody's aegis, but it's just in the same place.
Yeah.
We're giving some opportunities to other people.
Yeah, it's under our aegis until things get ropey legally, and then we're going to be cutting those guys loose. Yeah, so anyway, if you see other shows, try them. You might like them, you might not, but give them a go anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's a quick shout out. We'll get into that more in detail once they appear, because I'm sure my partner will have opinions about some of these shows. Maybe we'll spend a whole show criticizing other people who are under our aegis.
Yeah, it's at the blog, but like if you get a feed off of iTunes or any other RSS feeds that you can get the stuff automatically, it won't be in our feed per se, so you'd have to go to the blog to find it.
But the shows will be found separately on Libsyn.
Yeah. So they'll have their own feeds.
They will have their own feeds. That's exactly right. So anyway, there you go. So some other shows coming that way to our media empire, which mm-hmm. is something I know I've always wanted.
Right.
And you half wanted it with the YouTube channel effort.
I was willing to go there. Along with it. I'm not really actively involved in that aspect of the Atlantic Voice. Have you come up with a New Year's resolution yet?
No.
Okay. So we'll postpone that. I kind of knew you didn't, but I wanted to use that as a point to say, well, you know, we do get feedback occasionally, and I got direct in-person feedback from your mother who gave me a hard time for suggesting that Ha Ha Tonka didn't sound like Paul Simon. In other words, I last time we were on our New Year's show talking about Ha Ha Tonka, the band.
She liked them a lot.
And you guys had said it sounded like Paul Simon. I dismissed that out of hand. Apparently, I was too dismissive of somebody else's opinion there.
I forgot to reference it when that was on. My mother also said they sounded like Mumford & Sons.
Yeah, really.
Do they? I don't listen to Mumford & Sons.
In the sense
I didn't like Ha Ha Tonka. So.
In the sense that Mumford & Sons is a British band copying traditional American roots rock structures.
Nice.
Yes. Okay. They don't sound like Mumford & Sons in the sense that they are copying them. They are actually from the Midwest playing this kind of music. Mumford & Sons is like a gimmick band.
So Ha Ha Tonka, the album I didn't like from our resolution show.
Right.
I feel like we've made it up to them by shouting them
talking
out
about them all the time.
Separate shows. Well, I might even tweet them.
And of course I like them. They were my favorite. So, you know, if Ha Ha Tonka is listening, don't feel dismissed just because some British guy doesn't like you too much.
All right. So let's get on to this week's show.
That's right.
Saturday Night Live. We are going to, I guess
we're having a match.
We're having a match. Yes, we have challenged each other with dueling Saturday Night Live teams.
That's right.
And both like
taking the best folks, matching them up against each other. We had a draft earlier in the week where
as I call it,
we had a draft where we alternated picks. Actually, a snake draft where you went once, I went twice, you went twice, kind of going through the whole thing.
The S curve is the technical term. I've never heard of the phrase snake draft.
Although
it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think. Well, I guess a snake draft is really when you have a big group.
But technically, anyway. In pro sports, it's drafting on the S curve.
Right. So we ultimately picked. So this way we would have, you know, if you pick somebody, the other person couldn't pick them. We each have a team of five of our favorites or we think they're the best. And now we have created a lineup, which we have not disclosed to each other, where we will match up in one-on-one matches as if this was like a tennis,
team tennis tournament.
Like a penalty shootout. That's a better analogy for us.
I think it's important before we launch into the show. Eric is a big fan of Saturday Night Live. I am not. But I know enough about Saturday Night Live to go ahead and pick a team. And so I just think it's important. We're both sort of coming from it slightly differently.
Yeah, my fandom, I'm sure you're going to give me a hard time about Saturday Night Live not being funny all the time. And my fandom is less about like, oh, it's my favorite show in the sense of like a great, like True Detective or something like that, where it's in inhale. But it's a touchstone culturally, and it's a real way to kind of tell what's going on out there and what people are thinking about in terms of comedy and in terms of zeitgeist and all that. Zeitgeist.
Yeah. I think we established that about a year ago. No, but it is true. Saturday Night Live is one of those shows, and obviously here in the United States, but it's got to. But it's interesting. If you listen somewhere else in the world, some of the people that we're going to be talking about, they're going to be mainly actors in Hollywood that you're going to be familiar with. For those of you who don't watch Saturday Night Live or don't have it, you need to understand that all these people that you might recognize in the next hour and 20 minutes, they all have Saturday Night Live on their resume. Right. So it's not just a touchstone for you as a person. I think it's fair to say it is, at least for American comedy, it is a touchstone for many.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. It's like, you know, what's going on and who's up and coming, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean even for them,
if you and I were both famous Hollywood comedic actors and we were meeting for the first time, I might go, "Oh, you were on Saturday Night Live." Yes, I was on it in 1989 type thing. So what I'm saying is it is very much sort of like a bus stop for talent. Mm-hmm. Everyone has sat there and waited for their bus of good fortune.
Before the time they could afford airline tickets, they were at the bus stop.
Or it's usually an airport, whatever you want to do.
With some exceptions, most of the folks are, you know, they're going from nothing to Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
You know, they had a few years in between where people who were already stars were appearing. That didn't work out too well.
All right, so we've got two teams.
And we should say we're going to match them up and which one's best. And the question anybody would ask is, what do you mean by best? Best on Saturday Night Live? Best as a person, best in other media or something like that? Well, we're not going to answer that question. We're just going to decide which one is the best somehow. We'll talk about their on Saturday Night Live and off Saturday Night Live, but we'll have to decide who wins.
I think, it's going to fit whatever parameters we need to make our case.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to be disclosing ours one at a time. Okay.
I've got a Russell paper, so everyone knows that I've done research.
Should we have you go first? By the way, we're going to use clips, which may go horribly because Saturday Night Live clips are now exclusively on Yahoo Screen, which is their video app, and it's miserable to work with.
Yeah.
So no kudos.
And very long commercials that you can't sort of avoid. 30-second
commercials to lead into this stuff, and it's hard to find things. Not everything is up there, so a little hit or miss on the clips.
But you know something? Thanks to the magic of editing, the show will still appear seamless. So listeners, don't feel you're going to get a chance to run to the fridge. You're going to have to press stop.
Seamless might be an overstatement. Well, but yeah.
We will tribute Saturday Night Live because this show is live.
Right. So I'm trying to decide. I guess we have to disclose our people first, and we'll talk about them both, sort of bounce it back and forth, because otherwise you can't really compare them. Like if you just described your person and then for
pick first overall in our draft?
No, you didn't.
I did. So why don't I just lay out my first? I'm going to go first in our shootout. Okay. This might not necessarily be the person that I picked first.
Sounds good.
Although as it is, I'm going to lead off in the matchup with the person I did pick first. I selected Phil Hartman.
Okay. I changed up my order for our penalty kick system here.
That's fine.
So my first matchup with Phil Hartman is John Belushi.
Ooh, good matchup. Good matchup.
So, I don't know, talk about Phil first, and we can kind of fill in here.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, I picked Phil Hartman. Now, again, I think, as we've already established, I'm not a big fan of Saturday Night Live, but I did watch it relatively religiously in the late 80s and early 90s. Back in the day before DVR, in the day of VCR. So, ultimately, you had to watch Saturday Night Live if you wanted to know what was going on. You know, before the internet, where everyone basically doesn't watch Saturday Night Live, they just go and surf through the best fits later. Phil Hartman was on the show for 8 years during that time. I like him. I think he was a great impressionist. To me, he's the ultimate Bill Clinton. He was the first guy to do Bill Clinton. He was doing Bill Clinton as Bill Clinton became president. And hopefully we're going to play a clip of Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton. I know that Daryl Hammond, who followed him, his Bill Clinton perhaps is known better, perhaps is arguably more accurate, but Phil Hartman was my first Bill Clinton, so he's the one I remember. Phil Hartman, if you don't watch Saturday Night Live, he did have a career outside of Saturday Night Live. He was on the sitcom News Radio for a number of years. He was also one of the original voices on The Simpsons, which I'd forgotten about until earlier today.
He did 52 episodes where he appears as a voice on The Simpsons.
I'm Troy McClure was his famous voice, but that was when The Simpsons were brand new. So he was on The Simpsons pretty much at ground zero.
Yes, no, that's for sure.
He was the original guest artist who basically did all the other voices. I think he was occasionally a mayor and just all kinds of other people. I always remember him as Troy McClure, TV's Troy McClure. And, of course, that's Phil Hartman. Again, he didn't have much of a career outside of Saturday Night Live and TV. He appeared in a couple of movies, including one with Sinbad, I think. I think he was in he was in a film, I think, with Sinbad. And I only say that because Sinbad, the comedian, tubby, tall, African-American gentleman, when he was the guest host of Saturday Night Live, he did his famous skit about black guys in Dracula movies, and I've always found that really, really funny. And I quite like Sinbad, the stand-up comedian anyway, but I think Phil Hartman did a movie with Sinbad, like House Sitter or something, or maybe that's... I don't know. Maybe I'm getting confused with someone else.
He has a horrible movie resume. Sure. I mean, like, it goes nowhere. So if we're talking about outside, he has the news radio thing. I always thought in news radio he was underused. It was like they perched him as this character, but he wasn't, like, integrated with the rest of the show.
No.
Like, it was very odd the way they set that up, and I think that was...
And when he passed away, tragically, he's another one who passed away early, and we'll talk about that a bit later. He was followed on that show by John Lovitz, who's also a longtime Saturday Night Live alumnus from around the same time.
Yeah, he's also he's the oldest, I think, of all, what would be the oldest at this point. He'd be 66 years old at this point. He was born in 1948. So he joined the show very late. He had a whole bunch of – he designed record albums.
He
did the covers for like a Poco album and some other albums, and he'd done a bunch of other things, and then somewhere along the line decided, you know what, I want to perform. And so he got involved in other sort of things much later in life. So he had to be he started on Saturday Night Live in 86, so he was already upper 30s.
Interesting. But other than the original cast – who I think, and when I say the original cast, I mean everyone who's on the show in the first 5 years, and so that's names like Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. It is interesting how as Saturday Night Live has evolved, it does appear to me to be a show full of younger, newer comedians. So it is interesting how, and as Phil Hartman plays in the background, this is Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Jogging for 3 blocks.
Besides, Mrs. Clint asked us not to let you into any more fast food places.
Well, I just want to mingle with the American people, talk with some real folks, maybe get a Diet Coke or something.
All right, fine.
It's where he's jogging.
Mrs. Clinton.
Jim, let me tell you something. There's going to be a whole bunch of things we don't tell Mrs. Clinton.
First audio book.
Fast food is the least of our worries.
Okay? So again, I just can turn that down while we continue to talk.
Yeah, especially since it's barely working. Thank you very much, Yahoo Screen.
Phil Hartman was, again, my first Bill Clinton. To finish the point I was making before we played a little bit of the clip there, Saturday Night Live now does seem to be the domain of younger, newer faces. So Phil Hartman is like, he's a little bit of an outlier in the fact that he's an older gentleman on the show, but he stayed on the show for a long time. There are plenty of people who've cycled through for the occasional season, and I'm going to drop some names before turning our shootout over to Eric and John Belushi. People like Michael McKean, who people know from This Is Spinal Tap movie, and Christopher Guest, they're all guys who've sort of been on the show for 1 or 2 years, and they are older. But people who've had a long tenure tended to come to the show younger. And so it does make Phil Hartman, you know, again, a bit of an outlier.
Yeah. He was great on Saturday. He was one of the best, and I could see why you would pick him first in terms of Saturday Live. It was called the glue on there in the sense that I think Adam Sandler coined that term, and it was – he held so many things together.
Yeah.
Like he didn't really – he played a different kind of role and stuff. He had some zingy characters, but it was much more like whatever skit there was, he could fill a hole and tie it all together.
Yeah, that's a great point. Other than famous people that he's done impersonations of, the one thing that maybe again makes him slightly different is he doesn't have a fictional character that you go, yeah, he's law, you know, sound man or whatever it may be.
I will say he did have this one. Let's see if we can get into a piece of it.
Mr. Key Rock, are you ready to give your summation?
It's just Key Rock, Your Honor, and yes. I'm ready. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm just a caveman. I fell in some ice and was later thawed by your scientists. Your world frightens and confuses me. Sometimes when I fly to Europe on the Concorde, I wonder, am I inside some sort of giant bird? And am I going to be digested? I don't know, because I'm a caveman. That's the way I think. When I'm courtside at a Knicks game, I wonder if the ball is some sort of food they're fighting over. When I see my image on the security monitor at the country club, I think, are they stealing my soul? I get so upset, I hop out of my Range Rover and run across the fairway to the clubhouse where I get Carlos to make me one of those martinis he's so famous for to soothe my primitive caveman brain. But whatever world you're from, I do know one thing. In the 20 years from March 22nd, 1972, when he first ordered that extra nicotine be put into his product, until February 25th, 1992, when he issued an interoffice memorandum stopping the addition of that nicotine, my client was legally insane.
So, this was a really good skit, I thought, overall. It just, you know, obviously this counterpoint of people like, oh, I don't know anything, and then they get all kind of expert on you. But that was a great character, and also it has an element to it that I think, a satire element to it that I think is missing in some of the folks we're going to talk about.
I think
about
that's here. Very true, yeah. So. And it's interesting. I want to pick up on two things. One thing I said earlier and another thing that you just said. Anyone who's not familiar, when you hear that voice, if you've watched The Simpsons, it suddenly makes sense to you. That's Phil Hartman. And what you said about him being – one of the reasons I liked him was this whole reason that he was the glue of the show. One of his sort of overlapping contemporaries was Dana Carvey. And I look at Dana Carvey, who's not picked in any of our lineups, of having a sort of a similar career. He's not been that strong away from Saturday Night Live. Dana Carvey could do a lot of different impersonations. He was similar to Phil Hartman in terms of he's one of those performers who you get out there and you can do what's needed. I guess the only thing that was different was Dana Carvey's impersonations. He is the definitive George Bush the Elder. Mm-hmm. He's got a couple of other characters alongside Mike Myers. He was Garth on the whole Wayne's World shtick, which went from Saturday Night into the cinema. But again, Hartman was that sort of person where you're on the show and whatever needs to be done, yep, we need someone to play an insurance salesman. Can you do that this week? And I just like him because, yeah, I really, in a weird way, he's the ultimate skit comedian because he's not anything else.
Yeah, well, fair enough. All right, so we're already killing our timing here. But John Belushi, right? You know, I mean, very little needs to be said about what a legend he is overall. Again, here's somebody who's passed away. He didn't get all the time that Hartman did to impress us, and you know, didn't get that much age on him before he passed away. So he was on the show from 75, the beginning, to 79, 4 years there. He would be 65 now. So get that. Belushi would be younger than Phil Hartman.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It's just crazy to think about how long
about
ago
both
it was.
Them, yeah,
yeah. Say how the timing was different. You know, his Saturday Live characters. There's a trouble. Like, I think I realized in looking at this stuff that the older Saturday Live characters, the sort of recurrent characters, were a different kind of thing. So he had some characters that you'd know of, like the samurai tailor, yeah, and all the samurai gimmicks, us, which apparently he did not like that piece very much. He did the Blues Brothers stuff. He did he played Joe Cocker on there. It just doesn't quite ring the same way, and I had a real hard time coming up with
Cheeseburger, is that him?
Yeah,
Samurai,
yeah, exactly,
Chef.
Right. Okay. Cheeseburger is separate from that. That's like patterned off of a Chicago diner. So the clip I have, there's almost no actual John Belushi. I mean, he's in it picturally, but it's not very good for radio.
Here's his approach. And he got it!
I should have started at the beginning. This is
Belushi's won the gold. Now he's going for the world's record. He's making his move. They're on the final turn. He's kicking it in. He's got it.
And these are one of these things that wasn't a live skit. it was like presaged all the digital shorts they do now. This was obviously film at that time, but it's sort of pretending that.
Miles training for that day, and I downed a lot of donuts, little chocolate donuts. They taste good, and they've got the sugar I need to get me going in the morning. That's why little chocolate donuts have been on my training table since I was a kid. Little chocolate donuts. The donuts of champions.
I think that's Marv Albert.
I think that is Marv Albert, yeah.
So, you know, he's got a... So you got his on Saturday Live stuff, maybe hard to capture at this point, not as present as Phil Hartman. He wasn't the glue. I mean, he was obviously sort of revolutionary in what he did, which was make him different. Like, Phil Hartman wasn't exactly revolutionary. He just – he was a consummate professional, whereas Belushi was more
mercurial.
Of a, Belushi was.
Yeah. That's the difference. Right. One guy's he's bringing his lunch pail every day. Right. The other guy is showing up and doing his thing and then wandering off for 4 hours, and they're both extremely valuable to the show in different ways. I think it's probably fair to say that Belushi historically is the more renowned.
Yeah, he had more performer. Of an effect on culture and things like that. I mean, so.
But is that because of Saturday Night Live, or is that because of John Belushi? I mean, you know, well, everyone in the world knows John Belushi. Ooh, Animal House.
Animal House. I was going to say that's. Yeah, I mean, you know between I mean? Animal House and Blues Brothers, it was a whole Blues different Brothers. Type of yeah. comedy. And so that's why I was going to say, listen, movies, he's got it all over Phil Hartman, because even though he has a short career, he's just by getting Animal House and Blues Brothers. Right off the bat, he's sort of winning against Phil Hartman in the outside of Saturday Night Live situation. He also did some bad movies in 1941.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, which 41. Was like a kind of a bomb, right? Continental Divide and Neighbors were both movies
both
that
bombs.
Were kind of big.
Yeah.
I don't think they were total bombs, but like Continental Divide was a drama, like, and he wasn't really doing a comedic role in it.
And that had Julie Haggerty in it. Who was famous for being the girl on the Airplane movies.
Oh, yeah.
She's the stewardess in the original Airplane. And please stop calling me Shirley.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
The when he left Saturday Live, he left with Aykroyd. He was always not entirely sold on Saturday Live. So I should have really read the book again, the Tom Shales book about live from New York, whatever, that big book all about the history of Saturday Night Live. But I was listening to a Lorne Michaels interview, and they really had to convince him to join Saturday Night Live.
Lorne Michaels was not even American. He's Canadian.
Yeah, so was Phil Hartman, I think.
Oh, was he? Oh. Let me ask you a question about John Belushi's career there. You mentioned the film Neighbors, obviously to refer to our own summer movie preview. Was the Neighbors with Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne and the other dude, was that in any way inspired or a remake of that John Belushi movie?
I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
We'll move on. There you go. If you know the answer to that, please feel free to.
No, I think it was really. So that was a movie he did with Aykroyd. Like when he and Aykroyd both left at the same time, and other than Continental Divide, all of the movies involved Belushi and Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Like, so Animal House was done while he was on Saturday Night Live, so that doesn't have any Aykroyd. But when they left together, the movies they did after that were related to each other, and they were sort of tying themselves together.
All right, so let's keep some score. John Belushi, obviously the greater talent, but I win because Phil Hartman had more to do on Saturday Night Live.
I'm going
to
give you this one. I mean, obviously it was your top pick. Actually, in retrospect, I thought I was going to talk about this later. I forgot Belushi was up front for my listing. But when I went over this again, I regret having not picked Aykroyd in this spot. Because Aykroyd, really, when you look at the Saturday Night Live body of work, has more notable characters. He has, like, the male gigolo guy, or male prostitute. I forget what the guy's name was. But and he did the Bass-O-Matic. He did the Julia Child. He did a lot of things that actually more for you. And his movie body of work is quite impressive.
I look at Aykroyd to Saturday Night Live, and this is probably completely inaccurate because I didn't grow up with Saturday Night Live, so my history is probably off. I look at Dan Aykroyd to Saturday Night Live in the same way that I look at John Cleese to Monty Python, meaning that he was one of the big engines. And let's face it, if you go to anyone in England and say, name Monty Python, the first name, as much as all the other guys, Eric Idle, Michael Palin, are renowned and we love them, the first name out of your mouth is John Cleese. Also, John Cleese has had an impressive career away from Monty Python, which defined him. I would put Aykroyd in a similar category in what you just said. He's still acting in films now.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, and like, I can't
And there are still moments when he does something and you go, yeah, that guy's a comedic genius.
Yeah, since he's not on our list, I don't want to get too bogged down. No. But, like, you know, I can't think of
it. But again, Aykroyd, you didn't make our team, so.
No, I know. He was on our my draft board. He was on my draft board. He just wasn't picked.
He was on my draft board as well.
Yep. So next up, I guess I should go first.
You go first.
All right. So I am going to go with Chris Farley as my second kicker.
Oh, you're going to kill me. My second kicker, and I did this in classic World Cup fashion. I put someone who I believed is strong at number one, and then I'm going to try and hide some players at two and three. I picked Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, yeah.
Should I just quickly defend that and then let you turn it over to you?
Go ahead, try to defend that.
All right. By the time, to go back to the other night when we drafted our teams, neither Eric nor I had picked anyone not American, white, Caucasian, and not male. So I felt it was my duty to pick a female. I tend not to like, I'm not a fan of Tina Fey. I'm not a fan of Amy Poehler. I'm not a fan of Victoria Jackson or Jan Hooks, female names from the history of Saturday Night Live. I don't remember Jane Curtin. When I looked on Wikipedia and saw that Sarah Silverman had done a year, I picked Sarah Silverman. She's on my team. She appeared on Saturday Night Live for 1 year. She's been back as a host.
Not even. She was on Saturday Night Live for 18 weeks.
Well, there you go. That's one
I guess
one
that's
season.
One season. But, you know, she didn't even last through the off season or something like
but
that.
But I want to make a legitimate.
She got fired.
But I want to make a legitimate point now about Sarah Silverman.
This is 93-94 just for, you know, the 93-94 season.
Sarah Silverman, and I think, I need to be honest, I don't watch Saturday Night Live. I'm not its biggest fan. Sarah Silverman, in a weird way for me, epitomizes many of the things that I don't like about Saturday Night Live. If you watch her now, she's edgy, she's hip, she's irreverent, she's cutting. And the reason I don't watch Saturday Night Live over the last 6 or 7 or 8 years is I have a sense that the show is not that anymore. And that's why I pick Sarah Silverman, because she represents everything that I wished Saturday Night Live was more often.
All right. Well, I think there's one clip of hers that's available, yes. So we'll go ahead and play it for a couple seconds.
Important event of this past week was, of course, the wedding of my sister, Susan Silverman, to Yosef Abramowitz. It was a really neat wedding, too, you know, because they took each other's last names and hyphenated it. So now my sister's name is Susan Silverman Abramowitz. But they're thinking of shortening it to just Jews.
You can turn it down, because that's been Sarah Silverman's career shtick.
For me, because when I was 14, I actually dated my father's best friend, which was so embarrassing for me, you know, my father having a 14-year-old best friend.
So, like, I think
plus, I also have a secret crush on Sarah Silverman.
Oh, yeah.
And I figure if what's his name, Jimmy Kimmel, can go out with her for a number of years, well,
you know,
why
but
can't
she
I?
Divorced him, so.
No, but still. So she's available to go out with a funny podcast.
There is, there's somebody we know who actually, a member of the household who immediately when they heard that you had picked Sarah Silverman, figured it was because you had a thing for her. I think that fits your type in some fashion. I'm not exactly sure what that means.
I will be tweeting hashtag Sarah Silverman on my Twitter just to try and get some love somehow.
She can tune in and we put the boot on her. Like, listen, there for 18 months. She had like,
no, I know.
The reason that clip is there, I think they gave her, indulged her and let her put her stuff, because it was a weekend update commentary, which is a good opportunity for stand-up type people to just put their stuff out. Like, you know, she writes one skit, but like none of the stuff, she was a writer as well. None of her writing got to air except for, I think, maybe one.
I do want to make one legitimate point about Saturday Night Live, though, before I turn it over to you completely. Yeah, I've already conceded this. But Sarah Silverman is a prime example.
She has no movie career either to speak of.
Oh, but she's a comedian, but she still had a stop on Saturday Night Live. Mm. And in a weird way, Saturday Night Live, to the comedic industry, it's almost like a trade school. Everyone shows up and takes a couple of classes. And Sarah Silverman's a classic example. I mean, I think that, you know, Louis C.K. is probably the exception. He's someone who went straight to comedy without going to comedy college, which is Saturday Night Live. So there you go. That's my point on Sarah Silverman.
So we'll talk about Chris Farley, who was on from 90 to 95, about 5 years. He would be 50 years old now if he was still alive, but he's not. And one of his biggest skits ever, we're going to play a clip from. I need to do a little lead in where we get past it. Phil Hartman and David Spade, and also appearing in this one.
Father Ted and I are a little bit concerned. Celia, the cleaning lady, was in the family room and she found a bag of pot.
This takes a little while to get going into it, and so I'm going to just tune it down here for a second here. Just in terms of outside of Saturday Night Live, kind of like Belushi, didn't really have much time to do a lot, but did have two big movies, or at least big movies once they got to video.
See, I'm not so sure about that. And well, they made a ton of money since, but
they're not like...
All right.
But it's Black Sheep and Tommy Boy, both with David Spade.
Yes.
You know, both playing up his big... goofball idiot kind of character, which
three of our first four kickers all are in the list of NSL curse premature deaths on Wikipedia.
This is taking too long. I think let me just skip ahead a little bit here.
Chris Farley, you know, he's really funny. Again, I thought about drafting him, but I kind of figured you would. Funny, but you know what? He was funny too, in that, you know, and this is a horrible stereotype. Because he was quite a portly gentleman.
He's more than just... I mean, like, you know, people talk about Belushi being the chunky guy. I mean, he's twice as big as Belushi.
Farley could play into that.
Yeah.
And yet he could also play characters where you completely lost the fact that... Do you know what I mean? Like, he understood... He was a comedian. He wasn't just a visual gag.
Well, they talked about the fact that even though he's huge, he had this sort of physical grace to him, if that's the right word. Like, they talk about, like, the Chippendale skit he had done. Or even this thing.
All right, how's everybody? Good, good, good. Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now, let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old. I am divorced. And I live in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably saying to yourselves, hey, I'm going to go out
in
and
I'm going to get the skit, Christine Applegate is hiding her face because she can't help but laugh.
Around and pull it down and put it in my pocket. Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat.
You see, I want to. He's a big guy. In that clip that you just heard, he's wearing tight trousers, a tight shirt. His stomach is over his belt. But I want to pick up on something you said there about he moved with some real grace.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way that, you know, everyone gives Jackie Chan credit for being a gymnast and a dancer, and that's why his movies are so so balletic in terms of their execution. I'm gonna say this. Chris Farley is the Jackie Chan of Saturday Night Live. He moved well.
I want to play a little bit of his other skit just to talk about the range, because it wasn't just all big goofy stuff. Yeah. This was a skit they did a few times called the Chris Farley Show, where he plays somebody.
This is Chris Farley Show. I'm Chris Farley, and our guest tonight is Martin Scorsese.
The actual Martin Scorsese, too. Yeah. Technical difficulties.
Greatest directors of all time. Man, that sounds stupid.
No, it was fine. It was fine.
Really?
No, it was fine, yeah.
No, was it? Idiot. I'm sorry.
It was fine.
Well, anyway, Mr. Scorsese is the director of the best movies ever made. Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and Goodfellas, which is completely awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks.
You remember that one scene in Goodfellas when Ray Liotta says to Joe Pesci, "You're a funny guy," and Joe Pesci goes, "I'm funny? How am I funny?" And Ray Liotta goes, "I mean, you're just funny." And Joe Pesci gets really angry and goes, "Am I a clown to you? Am I here to make you laugh? How am I funny?"
Yeah, sure, I remember.
That was awesome.
Thanks. Thank you.
I mean, there's like real humanity in his stuff, which is really makes the whole fact of him, you know, what happened to him. He passed away, but drug overdose, really sort of tragic.
This sounds really stereotypical. Because obviously we've just watched the clip, which is sort of like a fake interview show on TV. You know who I see? I love Zach Galifianakis.
Mm-hmm.
I see similarities when you just said in terms of that sort of humanity, like there's a real person in there. It's not just someone goofing.
Yeah.
And Chris Farley, yeah, he Yeah, there was something about
Galifianakis. I mean, like he's got the same. He's weirder, but he's like, if you take Farland, you move him forward 20 years.
Yeah,
you know, like you say, okay, what's the kind of comedy? Well, it's going to be a little weirder and a little more off.
But there's that same sort of essence sort of like about them. There's a sort of innocence and honesty that's right at the heart of it. You know, he's not just an impressionist. He's not just a.
According to Wikipedia, he was supposed to be Shrek. And he had voiced 80 or 90% of the dialogue in the movie when he passed away.
I didn't know that.
And before, and then they had to bring in Mike Myers to like redo it all or something like
that. Oh wow!
But I can't figure out the timing of that because the movie was in 2001 and he passed away in 97. I mean, maybe it took that long to pull it all together. It
takes a long time.
So it's a Wikipedia entry. I don't know if it's totally true, but in any event, that's what it was. So fair to say, you conceded that. So we're one to one.
Yeah, 1-1. All right. So I guess I'm leading off with number three.
Uh-huh.
My third pick, and again, I need to keep saying this. I'm not a fan of Saturday Night Live. So I've picked people for what they said to me about Saturday Night Live as a show rather than were they the greatest people on it. I picked Dennis Miller.
Oh, interesting. Well, my third pick is Kristen Wiig.
Now, you notice I've gone back-to-back sort of people stand-up comedian commentator types rather than actors.
Mm-hmm.
You said that Sarah Silverman hasn't had much of an acting career. You're correct. Although she was in Jack Black's School of Rock.
Yeah, School of Rock. But she didn't really... She just played a pill.
She's actually had a quite... She's in a couple of serious films, too, which you should check out, and I will remember them later. She was in one with Seth Rogen.
I threw her papers on the floor.
And Michelle Williams. I can't remember what it was called, but it was about a woman who leaves her husband for someone else, and she played Sarah Silverman as a sister-in-law, but she was a serious role. She was very good in it. Dennis Miller hasn't had much of a career outside of Saturday Night Live, although he was Wesley Snipes' sidekick in The Great Murder at 1600.
Yeah, so we'll talk about him first. So he's sort of an interesting character. He'd be 61 now. He's was on SNL.
Well, he is 61. Right, he's still alive.
That's true. I don't want to assume they're all dead.
He's
from 85 to 91.
I'm going to put a boot into
Dennis Miller. Almost exclusively Weekend Update. Right? He was brought on the show specifically for that purpose, or at least he stepped into that immediately, and he really didn't do anything else.
Weekend Update is the fake news bit in the middle of Saturday Night Live, which has been a staple of the show since the start, right? And it's ironic because now TV is full of, I mean, again, everything about The Daily Show, and I love Jon Stewart, everything about The Daily Show is a riff on Weekend Update, a six-minute segment in the middle of Saturday Night Live. Everything about the show that's replaced Colbert, The Nightly Report, is a riff on... It's sort of taking the news and twisting it around in a fake news format. And so it is amazing how that segment on Saturday Night Live is a... You know, it's a foundation of American comedy. And I know skit shows... When I was a kid in England... TV skit shows always had the fake news, so the idea per se is not that original, but it is setting everything here in America. You can say, well, Saturday Night Live did it first, and like you said, Dennis Miller was a terrific Weekend Update because he had that very sort of dry, laconic.
Well,
he could almost be delivering it for real, and that's what makes it funny.
Yeah, I mean, he created a lot of that. The prior Weekend Updates played it more like characters, and he was just being Dennis Miller up there, and he's sort of commenting on these things. This is the clip that you gave. I don't even know what it is, but it says it's cold opening, so it's not
His last show, I didn't want to do.
Time for me to move on. So this is really your last show?
That's right.
You're really leaving us, Dennis?
Yes, this is it.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
The other voice here is Lorne Michael, the executive producer of Saturday Night Live.
No, I'm really going, Lorne.
Because that would be really pathetic.
No?
I mean, the man has no life.
This is definitely my last show.
I mean, thank God every now and then he gets a movie.
Yeah, well, I'm serious.
We talked over whoever they're talking about, so I don't know who it was.
Okay.
Love it.
Is there anything special you'd like to do for your last show?
Really?
Anything, Dennis, you name it.
Well, you know, I've always wanted to say live from New York. It's Saturday night.
Well, there's the camera. Be my guest.
Live from New York. It's Saturday night.
That was great. Well,
that's usually when they go to the music and all that stuff. So they let him say it, but they didn't really open it with him.
That's pretty much the only time he was out from behind the desk. Yeah. I think he appeared in an occasional skit as like third man on the right. So he actually did do other things.
Yeah, not very little.
You know, Dennis Miller, you're right. He was himself when he was on Saturday Night Live. He was just doing his thing.
And his career outside of it kind of reflects that, right? So he does Saturday Night Live. He doesn't go from that to like a TV show. He goes to talk shows. You know, like he had a the Dennis Miller Show for 7 months, which was intended to be a David Letterman type nighttime show.
Actually, wasn't bad. I remember seeing some of that.
Yeah, he did Dennis Miller Live on HBO for 5 years. Yeah. That was actually, and they had some Emmy Awards.
The same sort of thing.
Yeah, but that was like, he'd have a guest. I think that was like a big one where you'd have a celebrity guest and you could talk for a long time about this stuff. Kind of like a Bill Maher show, I think.
And I was just about to use that name. I feel like he was Bill Maher before Bill Maher came along and sort of really honed that shtick. And then Dennis Miller was sort of left.
Remember, he did 2 seasons on Monday Night
Football. I was going to come to that. I was going to say he was the only guy on Saturday Night Live who's the only guy on SNL who's also on MNF. And you know something? It was weird. When he was – I completely understand why they put him on Monday Night Football, and I wish people had been more open to it.
Yeah.
Because sports takes itself far too seriously. As a big Dennis Miller fan, I kind of knew he was going to bomb. I hoped he didn't. I don't think he bombed. I still love watching Saturday Night Live with him making his jokes, but clearly people don't want that sort of thing with their sport. It's interesting what you say when you talk about a commentator. He now tours with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, and he does regular appearances on Fox.
And they show up at theaters and they sit there and they go back and forth and basically make, you know, say nasty things about anyone who's a liberal. I only say that out because some good friends of mine go to see Bill O'Reilly and they have tickets to the Bill O'Reilly and Dennis Miller venue. As I said to them, two people will go in at certain IQ, they all return with an IQ less than what they started with. Right. That's me taking a shot at Bill O'Reilly. And now Dennis Miller.
Yeah, well, I understand he's more conservative. The thing that's funny, like he's doing, so he's got a radio show. I guess it's still going on since 2007, and it's supposed to be syndicated on Westwood One. I've never heard it on the radio.
No.
I mean, we're in a big
city.
I think I knew
that he had it.
It doesn't appear anywhere. For a guy who's he's continued to work, but he has no visibility in culture anymore.
On my notes, I put Dennis Miller in my team because Dennis Miller has made a career out of just being Dennis Miller. And at a certain level, hats off to you, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad gig if you can get it. I don't think he was a writer. Like, so Seth Meyers and Tina Fey were both big, you know, head writers for Saturday Night Live while they were the anchors. And so it kind of jibed with what they did. But I don't think he did that. I think he just was telling other people's jokes as far as I know, though I'm sure he does some writing, but like anybody. But so I don't think that was his principal piece.
I've hidden a guy in the middle of my lineup because we're keeping track of time. Go ahead and throw me a third guy. I'm conceding anyway.
It's Kristen Wiig, right? I mentioned that before. So she's now 41. She did 7 years on SNL from 2005 to 2012. So she's our most recent person that I think we're going to have on.
Yeah.
We didn't really – there are some pretty good newer people, but you can't really say they're the best yet. You haven't figured out what they're going to do, particularly when you take into account outside of the move – outside of this. She's got a whole list of characters, although I will say it was tough to like pull one together that really – was as funny.
She's
like
kind of
on
hot
the radio
as well. I mean, I hate to be that way about it. I mean, you know, like if Sarah Silverman doesn't want to date me, then Kristen Wiig, I'm available. I will just hashtag Kristen Wiig and see what happens.
This one is less cooperative. So this is one of her main characters from Saturday Live here, which takes a couple moments to get into. So we'll let it warm up here. But she was when she left Saturday Live. I mean, it was clear that everybody there on set, like she had this heavily emotional departure where she like did a dance with Lorne Michaels. They all were like circling around her. People were like crying and all this sort of stuff.
That was a customer. All right, take your cash drawer and get the F out of here. I'm on the clock and ready to rock.
Is this her Target Lady character?
Target Lady, it's just a job. You're full and you know it. God, I hope someone walks up soon so I can say welcome to Target. I just want to say welcome to Target. I just want to say welcome to Target to somebody. Welcome to Target!
Thanks, just this stuff.
Oh, yes, my favorite film, Madagascar, baby! I love DreamWorks. Cocktail-sized paper plates. You know, you can put two of these down your pants, one on each side of your bum, so your butt looks flat. Flat is where it's at, girlfriend.
Oh, I don't know if that's true.
What is this? Degree deodorant? And the scent is Cool Rush? Where'd you get this?
In the toiletries section. Hey, where are you going? Excuse me. The cashier just disappeared.
So she did this on a recurring basis. I mean, nowadays, Saturday Live, like, you get any traction on something, they're going to give you a recurring basis kind of thing. But you know, she had a lot of characters when I look back at it where she was doing the weird voice. Like, she played this this weird sort of some sort of physically disabled person on a Lawrence Welk show kind of spoof where she's like walking around just like weird noises like this kind of thing with the funny hands. She had these little itty bitty hands that they add prosthetics to her. And she's done, she did Gilly, which is another like kid character, which they rolled out in a special at one point. She's got this like character who like can't deal with surprises, a lot of like all this sort of weird voices. But then, you know, she's gone into movies now and she doesn't do that. Like, she's not doing SNL type movies. She's playing real characters.
I'm going to tell you why.
And her big breakout was, I mean, she's done other movies that have done decently, but Bridesmaids was the big one, which I don't know if she's a writer or producer or whatever it was. She was involved in it. But that was like where everybody was like, oh my goodness, now this is an actress to be reckoned with or something like that.
I said something really nasty. Not nasty. I said earlier, I don't like Tina Fey and I don't like Amy Poehler. And that's a reflection on me, not a reflection on them, because they're very talented. They're very good at what they are. I'm going to delve into my psyche for about 7 seconds. I actually don't
that's
take
all the introspection you've got.
I don't take critical positions on people. I take critical positions on how I perceive how people are perceived to me via the media. One of the reasons I don't like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler is I'm constantly reading on websites and in the media how awesome and how funny they are.
Yeah.
So you know me, I do so many things out of spite. I don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Wiig, or is it Kirsten Wiig or Kristen Wiig? And it's interesting, and this is what you said about, you know, when she left, it was very emotional. Like Chris Farley, there appears to me, and again, I'm not saying Amy Poehler and those guys don't have it, it's just they don't get represented to have it. Wiig seems to have this sort of humanity and empathy. She's just a funny person. She can write and she create. There is no, Kristen Wiig is still flying under the radar. There is still no media Kristen Wiig this, Kristen Wiig that. So I get to still like Kristen Wiig. The minute everyone starts telling me how funny she is and she's going to do this and she's going to do that, I'm going to sit here across the table from you and go, that Kristen Wiig sucks.
Did you see Adventureland with her and Bill Hader?
Is that the one where they play sister? They have a new film out with their brother.
Skeleton Twins.
That's supposed to be very good.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. And Skeleton Twins and Girl Most Likely are more recent things for
her. Well, I want to say something about both those movies and Kristen Wiig and the difference between, say, a Tina Fey and an Amy Poehler. And this isn't me being mean to anyone. Kristen Wiig can sort of play straight characters and make them funny, whereas Tina Fey and Amy Poehler have either not chosen those roles or they can't do it. They go straight in, and they're funny, funny, funny. Their character is funny. When Tina Fey tried to play a more sort of straighter comedic role, meaning, you know, it wasn't played for laughs.
An actual character.
Yeah, she was in the one film that bombed was the one where she was like a college counselor or something.
Paul Rudd.
And she tried to be much, Admissions and it just didn't work. Like
yeah.
Tina Fey works on 30 Rock.
That movie she did with Steve
where everything
Steve
heads
Carell
towards
was
a punchline.
Pretty successful.
Yeah,
it was almost a little sitcom-y.
Yeah,
but this she's done this. Adventureland is a movie from 2009 where Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader are a couple who run this like small amusement park.
Yes,
it's really very funny. I recommend that one to anybody. So
I think Jesse Eisenberg is in that too, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So I'm conceded.
All right.
I think you're leading.
Yeah, 2-1.
Because I've kind of thrown it away a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of this has to do with the way you drafted. But
oh, yeah. It's the way I've set up my team.
I think Sarah Silverman and Dennis Miller were going to pretty much lose to anybody.
Yeah, but I made some points with them.
But it's pretty good because,
you know, I'm not,
I didn't put my top star. Ooh, this is going to get interesting. I'm seeing who's left on our board, and it's going to get real interesting here in a minute.
I'm here to educate our listeners, and I'm trying to make a social statement about Saturday Night Live. Remember, I come at Saturday Night Live, and I mean this semi-facetiously, I come at Saturday Night Live as someone who doesn't watch it,
mm-hmm.
and it isn't the be-all and end-all of comedy to me.
Working
so that's why I picked those guys.
All right, so I want to hear your next person. I'm really hoping who it is. I'm hoping, because...
That's my Eddie Murphy impression.
You're going to Eddie Murphy? Fantastic.
I'm going with Eddie Murphy at number 4.
Okay.
And it's interesting. I've only seen Eddie Murphy skits on Saturday Night Live via YouTube and, like, reruns. I've seen him do Gumby... is it Buckwheat?
Yep.
And also the famous James Brown hot tub.
Mm-hmm.
I picked him not because I have any reference of him as Saturday Night Live, but he is a megastar. In the 80s, he was huge. Doesn't matter how big you get, Eddie Murphy still gets to say, I've got 2 years of Saturday Night Live on my resume.
4 years.
Four years. And what I mean is, as much as I'm not a fan of Saturday Night Live, every couple of years, you sit back and you go, wow, that guy's a true megastar, and he did his time on that show.
Well, I feel pretty good then, because I am matching up Bill Murray against Eddie Murphy.
Same guy. Wow, that's why
they align perfectly, because Bill Murray, again, going back to the old days, Bill Murray came on in the second season when Chevy Chase was working his way out. And in fact, there was like apparently a big tension between them, like where everybody was pissed at Chevy Chase, which I think is kind of what Chevy Chase is all about, is having everybody be pissed at him. And Bill Murray comes in and like he's the immediate buddy with all the people because he's, you know, part of the new pack. And, and like apparently they got in a fist fight at some point along the way.
And very different comedy beats, the two of them.
Yeah.
At least career-wise.
I think when I was younger, I liked Chevy Chase, the Fletch and all that sort of stuff. But Bill Murray.
Oh, Bill Murray now. Yeah.
He crushes, didn't he? Like Chevy Chase is busy like fighting for time on Community TV show. And Bill Murray is getting nominated for Academy Awards and things. Did he get nominated for St. Vincent, like an actor?
I don't know. But you know what I think? It's interesting. I think one of his best roles away from Saturday Night Live, he's not straight out comedic. Although most of his roles are kind of that way, aren't they? They're real people who just tend to be funny or able. I mean, you look at Lost in Translation. It's not really a comedy. Bill Murray doesn't spend the whole film being funny, but it's hilarious and it's real. There's another film I would recommend to people with Bill Murray where he's actually, it's called Broken Flowers, Jim Jarmusch film, and Bill Murray plays this guy who looks up all his old girlfriends, and there's Sharon Stone's in it, and Chloe Sevigny's in it, and I'm trying to think of, off the top of my head, there's a couple of other people that you'll go, wow, she's in it. He's great in it, and he just plays this regular older middle-aged guy. There's just this real sort of humanity about Bill Murray. And again, this is one of those things where the Bill Murray that you think you see, he becomes the Bill Murray that you think really is. But then you read things about who Bill Murray is and you go, yeah.
He kind of is.
He is. And that's kind of nice to know.
Like he's been appearing in all these, like he always, he does a bunch of golf stuff. So
the guy on screen is the guy.
Yeah, like apparently, I think he showed up at somebody's kickball game a couple of years ago or something like that and started just playing around here. So, but people kill us if we don't at least play some Eddie Murphy clips. We'll come back to him here. So I go.
Oh, remind me, I have a story about my mother and Eddie Murphy.
This is like a bootleg one off of YouTube, though, since
so there will be no technical issues.
I don't know how long does it take for him to get his toes in the hot tub. Now remember, Eddie Murphy's got another facet that Bill Murray doesn't have. He's a singer. He had albums.
That's right,
He had that album produced by Rick James.
Yeah.
And I think he's done backup singing for other folks.
What was his massive hit? Oh, because I wanted to sing it right there. You forget with Eddie Murphy, obviously, you know, he had a stage where he's a great raunchy stand-up comedian with raw. I know his film career has bombed as of late.
Well, I mean, so listen, I know where you're going to. He was, so he's 80 to 84, he's on SNL. In 83 or 82, he does Delirious. The movie was actually filmed in Washington, D.C. and came out as a DVD or a VHS tape. And I think it was on HBO and people watch it. I know people, you know, when we were kids, it was high school time, we must have watched Delirious and Raw was in 87 20 times. You know, like this would be a thing. You're like, oh, what else are we going to do? We'll sit around somebody's house and watch this Eddie Murphy thing. He was a bona fide – and realize he comes out with 48 Hours was in 1982, so it's while he's on Saturday Live. So that's the movie with Nick Nolte. He then does Trading Places with Dan Aykroyd and Jamie Lee Curtis the next year. So now 83, still on it. He's doing this big movie. Then he does Beverly Hills Cop the next year. Up until like 86, 87.
And then, of course, The Golden Child.
Right, which was originally, I think they said it was originally for somebody who's supposed to be serious.
Yes.
Like, I forget who was supposed to be playing that role, but he was a rock star. I mean, like a Michael Jackson level kind of everything, like unbelievable, that one person where everybody could focus their cultural and artistic energies around kind of thing, where people, like, he's just consuming the space. The rest of Saturday Night Live during that time period stunk. I mean, Joe Piscopo was moderately good, but look, that didn't go anywhere. He was the whole Saturday Night Live. He dragged it out of, like, the doldrums it was, and after it got through the 70s and these all the original cast apart, it was a mess. He's there. He saves the show, basically. And he's just such a big present. All downhill from there. I mean, it's horrible since there. I mean, I get the fact that he's made a lot of money off of, like, the Doolittle movies and the,
so I guess your point,
the clumps
was, yeah,
and all that sort of stuff, but...
That wasn't the point I was actually going to make. But it's interesting. I do want to tie it to something you've just said there when you talked about how Eddie Murphy saved Saturday Night Live. When you watch those old clips, especially him just doing James Brown, I was going to say Eddie Murphy, raunchy, great stand-up comedian, acted in films, but at his heart... he's an unbelievable impressionist. An unbelievable mimic. And that's what I'm saying. His comedy is grounded in stand-up and being a mimic. And when you look through Saturday Night Live's cast, yes, there are guys who play themselves, like Chevy Chase, and maybe to a lesser extent Dan Aykroyd. But there are guys, I tend to like the guys like Phil Hartman and, you know, Dana Carvey, who are impressionists. And Eddie Murphy's one of those guys. I mean, he's a knockout.
Yeah, I mean, the impressions were sort of different. Like, he had that Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, which was obviously a spin on Mr. Robinson, but it wasn't an impression of Mr. Robinson.
No, but you know what I mean?
It was a spin on, like, so, like, he does the buckwheat skits here, which we... I mean, it's more inspired by
they're
it.
They're all here.
Who can put up in all the wrong places? Who can put
whoever Buckwheat sings a song, it's eternally his.
It died, dead a diver, then on the died, it died, a day behind.
Was he Saturday Night Live's first black guy?
No, Garrett Morris.
Okay.
Was in the original cast.
And Garrett Morris is related to who?
The Morris family.
Well, no, because I was watching Seinfeld with my mother the other week, and you know Jackie the lawyer?
Yeah.
Who told you to put the bomb on?
Yeah.
He's Phil Morris, and he's the son of Greg Morris, who was the African-American guy on the TV series Mission Impossible.
And it was only I've never heard of Garrett Morris being
okay. All right, well, there you go.
There's probably more than one Morris family around there. So the one skit that it wouldn't even really work well on a podcast that I loved about he did was another pre-recorded one where it was I think it was called White Like Me. It was one where Eddie Murphy he paints himself all white to find out what goes on in culture when black people aren't around.
Yeah.
And everywhere he goes, people are giving him things for free. Like, you know, like he goes to the bank and there's an African-American loan officer who then, like, the white boss comes in and takes him out. And he goes, no, just take the money. Take it. There's nobody here. There's nobody looking. And so the premise is that, like, when black people aren't around, we're all giving each other free stuff. And then it's just fantastic skit because it's got, like, social satire mixed in with, you know, straight comedy.
But we can – yeah. Are we going to pick a winner between these two?
Well, so I mean, we haven't totally talked about Bill Murray. There's not the Bill Murray's Saturday Night Live involvement is less. I mean, there's no way. I mean, Eddie Murphy
they are similar in that Bill Murray and both Bill Murray and Eddie Murphy have monstrous careers beyond Saturday Night Live. Murray maybe to a lesser extent, but remember he was in Ghostbusters, Groundhog Day.
If you look at the whole body of things, I think Bill Murray's probably bigger.
Yeah, but what I would say this too is that, you know, they both appeal to their fans in that way. Do you know what I mean? Like, you both go, oh yeah, you know, that people are hardcore about Eddie Murphy, people are hardcore about Bill Murray.
But are people hardcore about Eddie Murphy now?
Like,
he's a little bit of a forgotten guy.
Yeah, now, but when one of his films comes on, you sit there and you go, oh, Eddie Murphy's hilarious.
This is a bit from Bill Murray was first on. Apparently, it wasn't going that well, so he did this.
I'm Bill Murray. You can call me Billy, but around here, everybody just calls me the new guy. I want to thank the producer, Lorne Michaels, for urging me to speak with you directly. You see, I'm a little bit concerned. I don't think I'm making it on...
Oh, technical difficulties.
On the show. I'm a funny guy, but I haven't been so funny on the show. My friends say, how come they're giving you all those parts that aren't funny? Well, it's not the material, it's me. If it's not that I'm not funny. It's that I'm not being funny at the right time. Honest. Before, you know, I could be funny whenever I wanted. But now, as a professional, I have to learn to pick my spots, you know. This morning, I picked up my laundry. The guy says to me, Bill, you know, every time you come in here, you say something funny. But I saw you on the show Saturday night, and you stunk. Well, that hurt, you know. Just totally destroyed my confidence. Last Friday, I went to a party with Danny. There was a pretty girl there I wanted to impress, and I'm a party animal. I was very funny. Danny said nothing. He was saving it. She said to me, you're so funny, I wish I had a tape recorder. Well, I wish she had, too, you know. Saturday night after the show, when she went home with Dan, I could have played the tape back for her. Now, what I'm asking for is your support. I've gotten some nice letters from old friends and people I owe money to.
There's a part people, he gets to that's sort of interesting here.
I'm not asking for letters, but I know this sounds corny. Support. I'm a Catholic. I'm one of nine children. Ed, Brian, Nance, Pickaby, Lorraine, John, and Joel. I can say that faster, but I wanted them all to hear their names. I was raised in Wilmette, Illinois, a small mining town.
These are all like a true story.
Yeah.
That reminds me of something funny. My father died when I was 17. That's not what was funny. He was funny. People always said to me, oh, you'll never grow up to be as funny as your dad. And now he's not around to see me be not as funny as him. My sister Nancy is a nun. My mom works to support the family.
So, and they say, I mean, obviously this is before my day, but they say this was like a huge turning point for him on the show. Like, it wasn't really clear if he was, you know, partly because Chevy Chase was such a big star initially. They were like, who's this guy? You know, like, because at that point, you didn't think of the show as being rotating. Like, he was a replacement. It was like if you watched a sitcom and suddenly put somebody new on your show.
That's true, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It wasn't, at this point, we know it's always changing up there. And they said, like, that was like, this got a tremendous reaction, and suddenly, like, just people were more receptive to him. And that's like Bill Murray. Bill Murray is, he's I mean, listen, you know, he's got his own life and things like that, but he's got.
He's funny. I don't know if this is right. He's funny by not being funny.
Yeah, well,
whereas Eddie Murphy, he'll go for your comedic jugular. Again, when he's at his best, he's grabbing you right there. But there is something about, and I'm not comparing them, I'm just contrasting them, as they happen to both be in our number four position and taking their penalties. Bill Murray is funny in that, I'm not funny, I'm just sort of middle-aged and this stuff is happening to me type thing. And even that's not a very good description of sort of Bill Murray's persona, but it's so unbelievably... It's based on humility and throwaway and almost being the butt of the joke.
Yeah. Just to mention like some of his movies, just so we have them on the list. Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes, Ghostbusters, obviously those were huge. Scrooged, which we watch every
we've
holiday
talked about,
time.
We like that.
Groundhog Day, Kingpin, Rushmore, which I don't know if I've ever
love
seen
Rushmore.
That,
love great Rushmore. Film. Love it.
Royal Tenenbaums, Lost in Translation.
A lot of Wes Anderson stuff.
Life there. Aquatic with Steve Zissou, another Wes Anderson one, right? Fantastic Mr. Fox, more Wes Anderson.
Yeah, he's a Wes Anderson.
Zombieland, you know.
Like, oh, that's right. He like, plays himself, doesn't he?
Yeah. Moonrise Kingdom, or that Grand Budapest. Well, I don't know what he was in Grand Budapest Hotel.
And Lost in Translation, obviously, where he was nominated for an Oscar and frankly probably should have won it that year.
Yeah, St. Vincent is now, now he's getting all kinds
and
of.
And again, I'm going to recommend to all of you out there a sort of dramatic comedy called Broken Flowers. Give it a go. Sharon Stone, I think, is in it too as another name.
So what do you say about this one? I mean,
you know, you in a perfect world, they both miss, don't they? So that they not one of them is better than the other one.
Yeah.
They both hit the woodwork with their penalty.
I think if, as a best of Saturday Night Live, I'm willing to give this to Eddie Murphy.
You have to go with Eddie Murphy, don't you?
Yeah. So we got a nice 2-2 matchup right here. So right. We know who our last people are, but nobody else does. Your last person, actually, although I wonder if people could guess. I wonder if, briefly, everybody, guess who you think our last two people are who are in our top 10 stars, so to speak. Have you guessed?
If it's not Scosh, it's crap.
So, Zeph takes Mike Myers.
I'm
going to take Will Ferrell. So why don't you talk about Mike Myers, because I have more things to pull up here.
You know, again, Mike Myers, like Dana Carvey, like Phil Hartman, I both like them because they are wonderful in they do characters. I've never seen Mike Myers do a stand-up routine. I don't know if he even does that. I've seen him interviewed on shows. He's funny when he lapses into character. Incredibly versatile, really talented. he's a big Anglophile. I think his family's, I think he's Canadian, but his mother, his father was British.
Right.
So he, you know, he appeals to me because, well, you know what I see in Mike Myers? I see someone who understands British TV sketch comedy, so he resonates with me. I could easily see someone like Mike Myers spending all his time as a kid watching things like Monty Python. So I'm not saying he's great, but what I'm saying is he resonates with me because, in a weird way, his cultural touchstones are the same as mine. Austin Powers is basically an homage to all 60s and 70s British TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So this is...
Welcome to all things Scottish. Our slogan is, if it's no Scottish, it's crap!
I just love... You've been saying that repeatedly for the past week as we led up to this.
From,
the guy who played Scotty on Star Trek, you got that?
Oh, aye. James Doohan.
Yeah.
All righty. That'll be $7.22, please.
You know, it's funny, when I look at this at the beginning of the show, it reminds me of
the machine doesn't it work? I'll have to pay you
all
back
the
later.
Monty Python things that would be in the storefront.
Sure. Oh, yeah, gee, sorry about
like the one with the bird that's like that, like it ceased to be.
And that's what I'm saying.
Rodney, get out here and break some more Scotty posters, would you?
Man, Stuart, why don't you chill, man?
Oh, I'll chill you in a second, Sonny Jim. All right, away and sort out them shortbreads, would you? All right, yeah. But say, Rodney.
What's up, man?
I have a question for you. Are you...
So I'm going to keep talking while you're in that sort of role underneath.
What? Yeah, of course I'm wearing underwear.
Ah, no.
Most people know him for either Wayne's World, and I think Wayne is one of my least favorite Mike Myers characters. But of course, you know, everyone across the road knows him as Austin Powers, but right there in that skit, Austin Powers is almost like the compendium. You know, Mike Myers put everything he'd ever done, every impression ended up somewhere in an Austin Powers film, whether it's Fat Bastard or
all those characters.
You know, there's his Scottish character or Austin Powers himself. I just, you know, I do see the roots in Mike Myers of, like I say, that more anarchic British sketch comedy where they really were. They were rock stars in that they did something more than just made you laugh. They were anti-establishment. They were this, they were that. Do you know what I mean? There was a sense that they were groundbreakers in terms of turning over a generation. That's what Monty Python were. And I see Austin, I see Mike Myers, and I see someone who, like me, I was brought up on this stuff and I love it. And so everything, I think he's unabashed that in a weird way, his whole career is a tribute to the things that made him laugh. But like I say, you know, there's one other thing about Mike Myers that I like when he does all these characters. And unlike Dana Carvey and even unlike Phil Hartman, who are technically doing an impression of someone, Mike Myers is doing a character, and you get a sense that every moment he could look at you in the camera to go, I'm doing this character, are you with me? You're still following along? And I like that skill. Whereas Dana Carvey just does a character. And I'm saying he does it really well. Dana Carvey's Bush is brilliant. Dana Carvey's Church Lady is brilliant. Phil Hartman, his Bill Clinton is great. But Mike Myers creates a character, and there's that glint in his eye where it's going, yeah, can't you see I'm doing this character, and it's not very good, but it's funny, but it's not. Do you know what I mean? There's something about that.
I don't
that.
Know if it's a selling point, I will say. I know exactly.
It's a selling point.
It's basically like the guy in your classroom who'd be cracking the jokes and doing this sort of stuff, but they're still there with you. Yeah. They're not acting, really. Not, they're just playing a role.
I do feel with Myers, and all of them, they're comedians, but Mike Myers, there is this real sense of, I'm making you laugh because this there's something very genuine about him.
A couple of his other characters of note with Dieter on Sprockets, when they do that sort of stuff. We played Linda Richman on host of Coffee Talk.
Coffee Talk,
Talk amongst yourselves. I'm getting a little verklempt, you know, that whole bit there. Simon, the little boy who was like sitting in the tub and drawing.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
My drawings, you know, we talk all about some pretty good stuff. It's funny that you were talking about that and anti-establishment, because my critique of him, it's probably what you'd see and what you probably perceive. It's a little silly. Like, it doesn't have as much edge, I think, as some of these folks. Like, there isn't really – like, Monty Python stuff was – there was a definite satire element on all the things they were about, like poking fun at the culture of things, whereas less of that from
he's
him.
He's the nice kid cleaned up version of it. And I understand where that can be a criticism. But the fact that
I decided a lot of Canadian comedians are like that. They're like more like class clowny than they are
like Martin Short. Who it's funny enough, I can't stand Martin Short. I don't find him funny at all. I just like, oh, it's Martin Short again, and maybe because it's a different generation. But Mike Myers, I think it is. Maybe it's, but there's a slightly different cultural thing. Yeah. I don't know what it is. It's maybe what they're brought up on.
He did 6 years. He did a long stint on Saturday Night Live. He's 51 now, just to keep all our stats up. Wayne's World comes out in 92 while he's still on the show. Austin Powers comes out in 97 after he's off of the show. You know, during the heyday of those Wayne's World and Austin Powers and their sequels, pretty powerful. I think that last Austin Powers was gold member. It was a little bit. Everybody was like, yeah.
Okay. It was a bit.
We got it.
It was
now.
A bit beyond, yeah.
No. So
the first one is comedy genius, though.
Yeah, yeah. No,
when
no. When he
first
did it,
I mean, that's the character.
When I was thinking about the fact that he wasn't necessarily satire, I think the first Austin Powers, yeah, has like a lot of that. It's more like satire about the movies than it is about a culture.
Sure,
but
yes.
Like the whole notion of $1 million, and everybody's like, that's not.
And maybe that is the difference.
It's like a spoof of a Bond movie. That's why you like it. It's a spoof of a Bond movie.
But the point you made there, though, that is why generationally it's different. Because if you're Monty Python or anyone from back then, whether it be on this side of the Atlantic, and you think of Richard Pryor or any of those guys, they'll turn around and they fired both comedic barrels at institutions at the establishment. Mike Myers is the next generation down, where you make fun of yourself and your own industry. So it's a bit, you know, it's a bit safer that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas you're not going hard and really making, you know, ripping the president or whatever. You're sort of, and that's what Austin Powers and all those things are. They make fun of themselves, but they still do it very well. And
speaking of ripping the president, all I have to say is strategery. So Will Ferrell, obviously, so he's another one. He's a long term. He was my top pick. Just you did your picks more or less in your order. You changed it up. But you started with your top pick, and here's my top pick. I saved it for the last shot. You know, my top pick was because I figured it's going to beat anybody.
I picked Mike Myers second when I drafted.
Mm-hmm.
I picked Eddie Murphy.
It's not an unreasonable pick. Yeah. So he was in Saturday Night Live from 95 to 02. So overlapped with Myers, and then with the new generation of people that are on there, but he's got like sort of a bridge thing. He's got obviously movies he's done very well in. Actually, let's see. So I had a hard time coming up with characters for him because they just don't have a good listing of the things, and unfortunately there's a defect in my link, so I gotta pause this one and actually get the one I wanted.
It's funny, as you talk there, I saw Norm Macdonald flash upon the screen, who attempted to rip off Dennis Miller when he did Weekend Update. And of course,
then he got axed from that.
Oh yeah, and because he wasn't a very good version of Dennis Miller. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, he was supposed to be different. I always liked him.
Sort of a knockoff again, sort of that knockoff droll. Whereas Seth Meyers, when he did it, did a much more. Hey, yeah, I'm actually not as clever as everyone else, and this is kind of all going wrong. And I know this is sort of funny, and that's why. You sometimes have to be different than the predecessor a little bit. And I'm not sure if McDonald came. No, I think Kevin Nealon followed Dennis Miller on Weekend Update. So there is some space between Dennis Miller and Norm McDonald. It's interesting what you say.
I can't find the one I wanted to put up.
It's all right. It's interesting what you say about Will Ferrell, though. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and concede this to you now.
All right.
But it's close. I still think Mike Myers is a heck of a performer. The only reason, but I'm going to concede it this way, is that Will Ferrell arguably, and you can maybe say that perhaps Eddie Murphy, Will Ferrell, he has an unbelievably balanced career, either both in Saturday Night Live and after he left. When he was on Saturday Night Live, he was the dominant.
Oh yeah, like for a while there, he was the star.
He was the show.
Not the level Eddie Murphy was, but half of the stuff revolved around him.
Everything did him, whether he was with Sherry or Terry.
Yeah. It's gonna be one heck of a series. This is him doing Harry Carey.
Fantastic ball clubs with outstanding pitching. You've got Andy Pettit, David Cohn for the Yankees.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's another one that I was trying to pull up where he plays like a science.
He actually looks like the puppet Kim Jong Il from Team America World Police.
These teams are so evenly matched. Let's start with the Yankees. They play in New York City. Wow, what a town! This place is crazy. You people are nuts. I once saw an Armenian woman give birth to a baby in a subway. Beautiful, beautiful 8-pound, 3-ounce boy named Tanzu. He's now 11. We still keep in touch.
Okay. Well, Harry, what can you tell us?
Can I say something about Will Ferrell's comedic style on Saturday Night Live? And not a criticism, analysis. Whereas some of the people that I went for, people, again, like Phil Hartman and Mike Myers, who I feel are very good impressionists, Will Ferrell doesn't do impressions. He takes sometimes a real character. He finds one thing, like he's right. George Bush. It's an awful... When you think about it, if you close your eyes,
really
you go...
Like him. Yeah, it's not like, oh, I make a mistake.
It's an awful George Bush, but his ability is to find one thing sort of like that reminds you of... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's... Yeah, he's very good at then doing that and then turning it all the way up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know.
And he took that one on stage, so it added to his talents. He did a live show for a while on All About George Bush and You're Welcome, America, and some other stuff like that, where he was doing a regular appearance. I don't know what theater was in.
I'll say this about Will Ferrell.
He also like instrumental in Funny or Die, the website, and he's one of the main forces behind creating that and running it.
There are certain things about Will Ferrell that I just don't have any time for. I'm unlike you. I don't watch Anchorman. I'm not a huge fan of his old Saturday Night Live skit stuff. The stuff he did with not Jimmy Fallon, but the other one who's kind of short and reminds me of Chris Kattan.
That was really bad. But
yeah,
at the Roxbury.
As he's got older, I really appreciate him as a comedic talent. And it's weird. You mentioned Funny or Die. The fact that he does that, I'm like, yeah, this is someone who really...
Oh, yeah, he's one of those guys who, like, this is a craft. I mean, like, he's going to spend his time studying it and doing this stuff.
And I love that about any comedian.
Yeah, he's not just like, I'm going to luck into it kind of thing. I'm going to work at this stuff. So, like, just to rattle off some movies, he was in two of the Austin Powers movies, Zoolander, Old School, Elf, Anchorman, both of those, Blades of Glory, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys with Marky Mark, which was pretty good, Megamind, animated. Anchorman 2, Lego Movie most recently.
Yeah.
You know, he both did some live things and the playing the voice on the piece. But
for a comedian, he's actually got some comedic range because he's played straight man, he's played funny man, he's played slapstick.
Yeah, a couple of skits I was pulling up, like, he did that Jeopardy skit all the time, and I was like,
yeah.
I did actually mean to say skit.
Yeah, that's fine.
But he was really playing, like, he was playing the straight guy. Everybody was giving him a hard time, and I was like, well, it's not really, he's not the one being funny, he's being the glue, kind of like Phil Hartman thing.
Like I say, for a comedian, and again, let's contrast and compare, I know it's not completely fair, Dennis Miller and Sarah Silverman, they only do their thing.
Right.
You know, when they're trying to do anything else, they're clearly acting. But Will Ferrell as a comedian is able to morph into some, real different areas.
He tried to do that drama, what was it, Stranger Than Fiction or whatever it was, and that didn't quite go well. I do think he's at a point where...
Was that Spike Jones?
Can he now turn... Is he going to turn this into something else, or is he going to continue on? I think at this point he's old enough that he's probably like, you know what? I'm really good at this range. I don't need to become like Robin Williams doing dramatic roles and then switching back to comedic things kind of thing. So,
no, but I'd like to see him do it. Yeah. Again, I think as a comedian, I mean, don't they say comedy is ultimately the hardest? Isn't that an old show business saying? I think there is something like that, that comedy is the hardest thing to get right.
It's one of those sayings where...
I have taken it and bastardized it.
No. I was going to say it's one of those sayings that people say that when they just want to say comedy's harder. Like, it's just very... You use that saying when it's opportunistic to do so. I don't know that anybody's actually sat down objectively.
I do think that... You really appreciate watching when you look at the width of his career and the heft of it. You really appreciate what he can do and what he's done. And I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you that just.
All right.
So we're getting towards the end of the show. Is there anything else in sort of three or four bonus minutes we want to throw at
Well,
people?
You know, we were going to try to do this as a team matchup, but I don't think that would really add anything. You know, just say like, if you had a 5-on-5 here, which team would win? Pretty sure mine would.
I think you win convincingly, but I think individually my guys hang close in the
That's
way
right.
that we
the matches
we,
up. Yeah. Like the problem is you got Sarah Silverman and Dennis Miller who like you know
because I only watch Saturday Night Live for like I said don't you, watch Saturday Night
well,
Live.
Like I said, New Year's resolution should be to watch Saturday Night Live
right,
this year.
Well, I'm going to do a multifaceted resolution.
We're going to go from none to a multi. Just to mention a couple people that were on my board who I did not put in addition to Aykroyd I mentioned before, which by the way that's the one I think I should have put in as Belushi instead of Belushi. Amy Poehler and Bill Hader were on my list. Again, I didn't go with any.
Hader was on my list.
Also, last out, Gilda Radner really deserves a nod when we're talking about the women there for sure, and anybody overall. And then John Lovitz was also one where I was like, obviously no career outside of Saturday Night Live to speak of, but fantastic on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny you said that because I picked a couple of other names. Jason Sudeikis is a big name now in comedy. He was
obviously, you're not up on things. That's a recent guy.
Yeah, 9 years on Saturday Night Live, but I didn't actually see him on Saturday Night Live. I just know he was on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The other names on my draft board, obviously, I'd circled Aykroyd as well, and I'd considered taking him first. Fred Armisen I considered, but that's because I like Portlandia and his new stuff a lot. It's interesting. Some of the names I circled are not the stars of Saturday Night Live, but they are people. They're lesser versions of Phil Hartman, and that you need that guy to roll out and he'll deliver the line of the world. I never liked Daryl Hammond, maybe because I didn't like him doing Bill Clinton. Tim Meadows is someone. You appear in different sketches, and you know he can kind of do. He's not the guy you built. There's a couple of characters that were built around him. I think a Love Doctor or whatever his name was. Mm-hmm. But obviously, Tim Meadows can come in and do different things. He's funny. Like I say, someone like Michael McKean, who was on the show for 2 years. Again, you'll recognize him from different stuff.
He's not a.
No, but I like those sort of bit part guys. Who is it who's now the senator?
Anthony Michael Hall.
Al Franken. But that's what I'm saying. The great thing about Saturday Night Live is that, yes, obviously it's been on all these years. It is a rotating cast. But it needs for every Will Ferrell, you also need four guys to play off of. And in a strange way, it's your ability to be someone who people can play off. And again, you talk about Chevy Chase and Bill Murray. Yeah, I guess Chevy Chase wasn't interested in having other people play off him so that they could look funny. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you're on a show like that, you do need people like that. And I tend to remember those people as much as I remember the person who is the star. And again, that's why I picked Phil Hartman number one, because he did a couple of things great, but he was also the second banana on a lot of skits. And Dana Carvey's a classic example of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was the sidekick to a lot of other characters as well as being... And I think Kristen Wiig is the same, too. And I think that's what makes you great if you're going to be part of a comedy troupe.
Yeah.
So anything else on Saturday Night Live?
No, I don't think so.
You had a lot of fun doing it, though, didn't you?
Yeah, sure.
You're watching all the clips, yeah. Yeah.
Well, if they just had a better website for him, I'd be a lot more excited.
Right, so we'll put the final. Eric's team wins, only because I had no knowledge of Saturday Night Live and I wasn't really trying.
Right. We know Zeph isn't competitive at all.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.